Tony.
Thank you. I'm Tony. I'm an addict.
Hi, Tony.
Thanks for asking me to do the chair, Gary. And I've got to say, when I came in here, my bottle completely went. And there's people that I see from my regular meetings and people that I know, and I look straight through them because all I saw was the people that I don't know. And I thought, how the fuck am I going to tell them my story? And they look like they're going to kick the shit out of me. And Lisa really broke the ice for me. Thanks for that. And as the meeting went on, of course, that was my fear and that was my head. And you still might beat the shit out of me after. I don't know. I don't want to offend anyone. But I let go of earning some money today. Thanks, Gary. And because this is what it's about for me. This is what, you know, because of this I can go out and earn money. Because of this I can have relationships and failed relationships and keep trying. And I can, you know, I've got a life today because of this. And yesterday I was in my area of London. I was walking down the road after doing a hard day's work, and I saw a member. And I won't say who it is for anonymity reasons, but what was disturbing was that a member was on their way to score, and they were with somebody else who wasn't in NA, and then they were telling me about someone else who was cold turkey, who's in NA, and I thought, fuck that, man, I'm going to a meeting tonight. It really is. I was just talking to Frank about it. It's a matter of life or death. It really is. And I get these little lessons because, you know, it doesn't matter how clean I am. What's really important to me is I remember the last of my using. I remember it very vividly, to tell you the truth. And my rock bottom, I really remember that vividly. And I hope I always will, because of the life that NA's given me today and my part, you know. Obviously, when I was using, I used to watch TV, you know, on one of them flea bitten fucking cigarette burns on the sofas, and watching politicians saying I could do that, and watching Top of the Pops saying I could do that, and watching fucking I could do that, and then it's like, well, get clean, show me what you can do, motherfucker. Right, so where the hell am I going with that? What I'm saying is that NA's really helped me to given me the tools to go out there and work and to be to have honest relationships, to be a responsible, productive member. I think one of the things that it's given me is because I know for me it's a disease of self-hatred. Every one of you in here could tell me you love me and you think I'm wonderful and that I do good things, and you could really, really big me up. But deep, deep down, if I don't feel that, it don't matter what you say to me. If I think that I'm shit and that I've fucked up my life and I'm just horrible and I'm bad, that's, for me, is what I'm up with addiction. I really believe when I was younger that I took drugs, it was a phase. And it lasted 15 years, some fucking phase that was. And you know, it wasn't really until I got clean that I really, really found out. I mean, I always had the discomfort. I always had that kind of low self-opinion. I always felt that I wasn't good enough. I always felt if I was so-and-so or him or her, my life would be better. And taking drugs was an escape for me. I've got 40 minutes. I can really rinse it. But at the beginning, I was a bit like, how the hell am I going to talk for 40 minutes? It really was an escape. When I was a kid, you know, my dad, you know, my family were still together. We're still a little unit and everything, and that kind of blood is thicker than water thing, which is great. We're not quite the Waltons, but, you know, there's definitely love and there's bonding there, and, you know, and they trust me today. But when I was a kid, my dad had a gambling addiction, and, you know, and we were always moving, and we were quite poor, and I'd look at TV and I'd look at, you know, and I'd watch movies and I'd have my crayons and all that, and I would just escape, you know, and I'd be escaping and I'd be drawing for hours. You'd get me in a corner and I'd just draw and draw. And if you got my toys, I was making movie scripts out of fucking James Bond cars and toy cowboys and Indians and, you know, writing movies, just escaping. In the playground, when the kids, they used to do this thing, roll around and get dizzy, and the teacher would ring the bell, and I'd be the last man standing. I'd still be on the playground getting fucking dizzy, just getting out of my nut, because it, you know, just escaping. Another thing that I used to do, and it took me a long time in recovery to remember, and then I found out a lot of you did it as well, and I hope, hopefully some of you in the room did it, was when I'd go to bed at night, when my mum would tuck me in or whatever, I'd get my hands like that, and I'd squeeze my eyes, and I'd squeeze them and squeeze them and squeeze, and what would happen is I'd start seeing colours and stars and all weird shit. And so I was escaping from living in a house, sharing a room with two brothers, and the food on the table, and going to school and getting bullied, and my dad coming home in a bad mood because he had no money. You know, I was escaping all the time. I had an uncle, which, this is fourth step stuff, but at the end of the day, I don't give a fuck. You know, I had an uncle who was, you know, he was interfering with me and my other brother. And there wasn't a soul in the world I could tell that to, you know, and there wasn't, and I'm not homophobic, but at the school that I was at, if you declared that your uncle had been fiddling with you, you'd have just got fucking, you'd have just got riddled out of the playground, you know what I mean? And I know that now, these days, that stuff is being dealt with more, and it's being looked at more, and everything, but in them days, you know, you just had to bottle it up and put on your John Wayne hat, right? So, and pretend you were tough. So I was carrying all that around. And then the first time I had a drink, I just fucking felt at ease. You know, I really felt at ease, and I was able to fucking sing and shout and jump on the tables and, you know, show off and talk to women, you know what I mean? And then as the years kind of went by, my dad did really well in his work. We moved to Ireland. We lived there for 3 years. I lived by the beach. It was a good life. I got a good education because the teachers who were priests beat the shit out of me. And they scared me. And I was so scared of them that I'd do my homework. Then it didn't work out. We came back to London, and the school I went to, we were telling the teachers what to do, right? And then I left school. Punk rock came out. I love punk. I love reggae. I love drugs. And I used to, you know, my mates, we'd go to gigs, we'd go to football on a Saturday, get our heads kicked in, go to football, you know, on a Friday night, go out and get drunk, you know, spend all night drinking, go and talk to a girl, all them kind of teenage things that, you know, you did in the 70s and the 80s. Anyway, 1979, the Shah of Iran got toppled, and in West London a load of heroin came in. I always had this romantic vision of heroin from, talking to older junkies from the 60s and around the West End and stuff like that, and, you know, people like William Burroughs, and I was fascinated by stuff like fucking Andy Warhol's factory and all that. Again, for me, it was an escape from the council estates. You know, drugs made my life, it seemed more colourful, because otherwise it just seemed like I went to work, I went to the pub, I got my money, I spent all my money, and drugs seemed to like open my world, you know? But I didn't want to touch that sort of stuff. I don't know why. I think my dad frightened me, even when I didn't even know what drugs were, and he used to lecture me and say, you know, watch your drink, and watch your mates, and this, that, and the other. And I didn't know what he was on about. And to be honest, everything that my dad told me not to do, I went out and did. You know, I was the one who brought the police back to the door. It was always me, all my brothers. I was always the one. I don't know, you know, that's an addiction, isn't it? You know what I mean? Because deep down, I think I wasn't a bad kid. I was just fucking wild, feelings, going mad, exploding, you know. And not knowing that it was all right. Not knowing that it was all right to have feelings. Nobody told me. And so I'd either spend my life trying to be something that I wasn't, or repressing, you know, like bottling up stuff. Anyway, getting back to that smack, and a lot of my mates that I looked up to, you know, how you have peers when you're brought up, you have the, you know, the ones who, they've always got the latest clothes first, or they've always got that latest tune first, or they've always, you know, got the nicest girl interested in them, you know, them kind of mates. Well, they started becoming a bit dishevelled, and started like talking out of the sides of their mouths, and started coming out, getting up late in the daytime, and being, you know, and not going to gigs anymore, and not interested in football, and getting a bit shabby looking, and what was happening was they were starting to get into smack, and people started getting prison sentences, and people like, I've got loads of friends who didn't make 25. I mean, that's fucking tragic. You know what I mean? Kids who you went to school with and who you were brought up with in your neighbourhood and everything, they never made 25, and it wasn't because of war or fucking illness, it was because of drugs. They died, they overdosed. They went mad and committed suicide. A couple of my good friends that I was brought up with and went to school. So that's what I'm saying, it's life or death. I'm not, it ain't the fucking Palladium, is it? I'm not here performing, I'm carrying a message of, you know, and I come here to get a message. And this is how it works, we're all little beavers, we're like a little team. And sometimes I come in here and I think like, you know, the key rings are there by magic, and the coffee's made by magic, and the literature's there by magic. Then I've got to look at myself, you know, then I've got to stop thinking, hold on, time, stop thinking about how you're going to earn money, or, you know, will she go out with you, or what are you going to be doing when you're 50? Think about today, this is life or death, and you've had another day, you know, you met someone yesterday who was in NA going to score up the Gold Hawk Road, you know, so I am very grateful, but there's a part of my life through using that is completely fucked up, and I can't replace that. But what I've got today is a life that I really deep down think today that I'm the person that I'm the kind of person, no matter what that's saying to me, that horrible fucking negative addictive head of mine, is that I think today I'm a person I'd like to hang out with. And that's a beautiful thing. I mean, it really is. Because I'm a fussy fucker. I am. I don't trust easily. And I think what recovery's given me is given me the courage and the kind of perseverance to become a decent person. I fuck up. I make mistakes. There's people who've got resentments with me. There's probably people in here who've got resentments with me. But I'm only human. And, oh, God, what else? Yeah. I don't go to other fellowships, and it's simply because I live in London. I don't really need to. I mean, if I'm stuck in fucking India or I don't know, in Alaska, and it's just an AA meeting, well, all right, I'm going to go to AA. I'll put my hands up. I'm an alcoholic. I'll definitely get an alcoholic story there. You know, give them one, the way I drank. And but I'm, you know, I'm definitely an addict. And what, getting back to that thing of I thought it was a phase, something that I went through, my mates that started taking heroin, yeah, that's it, I'll go back to that. They were dying at 25, right? And I didn't want to take heroin, or I didn't want to take cocaine, because all I knew it was bad. I watched Kojak and it was bad. I didn't know anyone who took it. But whenever I watch Kojak, people always got big prison sentences, and Kojak always had to talk to them, and they went away for a long, long time. I didn't really know that when I took cocaine and heroin, I was going to feel fucking amazing. I was going to feel wonderful. That the first time I took heroin, it was going to be like a big warm blanket around me that kept me really secure and really comfortable, and I didn't give a fuck about anything. And the first time that I took cocaine, you know, I felt like fucking Superman. I didn't know that. I just thought, don't take it, it's bad. And look at your friends, look where they're going. And of course, you know, I was probably one of the last of the gang to take it, and my friends just fucking, they were so disappointed in me, because although we were all using, and then the thieving started, and the lying, and the cheating, and everything, there's a camaraderie, you know what I mean? There's a kind of, like, You know, tell them don't do it, look at us, there was that kind of thing, you know, look what it's done to us, come on, you've done really well, you can, you know, you have a drink, you know, you take a bit of speed, you go out, don't end up like us. And I turned around and said, yeah, but it's really nice. And one of my friends, I remember, said to me, of course it's nice, how the fuck do you think we got like this? But that nice is an illusion. I chased my tail after that very first time for the rest of my using, you know. I'll talk a little bit about NA, you know, I still come to meetings, and I've been coming here 21 years, right? I'm 20 years clean, over 20 years clean, so you can imagine that first year I wasn't too sure, or I'd do a little bit more, or I thought it could work if I remixed the program, basically. I thought, well, look, I can understand why I can't take grade A drugs. I was looking at a prison sentence, I'd been busted, I'd lost everything, You know, I can tell you all of that. I know you know, you relate to that. And but I just thought, I've got to have a spliff. I'm sorry, but I've got to have a spliff, and I've got to have a drink, and I've got to unwind with a drink. I know cocaine, I know heroin has fucked my life up. I admitted that. I was in denial about addiction. I didn't do treatment. I didn't do rehabs. I went into detoxes. And they even told me in detoxes, we get you clean, you leave here with a choice. That's it, bottom line. There's no therapy here. There's no like looking at your childhood. There's no looking at abandonment issues or abuse issues. We get you clean and you're out the door, you've got a choice. And every time I left them places with a choice, I thought, I'll just have a little bit. And then a little bit would last me. I'd be back there 18 months later. By the grace of God, I was back there, because otherwise I would have been dead. You know, that was... So that's... So, at the time, I thought, how the fuck did I end up back here? Looking back on it, I'm lucky. I'm lucky I got back there, because I'm here now. And the last time I left one of them places, I wasn't the prize patient. I didn't leave there with all the nurses and the doctors thinking that, of all everyone here, Tony's going to do well, because I talked the fucking talk. I did everything. I made my bed. I did, you know, I went and, you know, I did, you know, everything that you're meant to do in these places I'd done. I'd slammed drugs. People that were cold turkey, I'd talk to them. Everyone thought, he's really going to do it, this one. Soon as I was out there, I'd ring someone who was at the bottom of the book who didn't know I was deep. You know when you're using, you've got people at the top of the book. And then when there's a drought, you've got people in the middle. And then when you owe someone money, there's someone that you don't go to, but you've got another one, and then you leave them for a while. And then you've got someone right very at the end of the book that you only really see when things are desperate or you've got to get on a bus to go to the other side of London. Well, I left detox and everyone thought I was clean and I didn't want them to know. And there was someone right at the bottom of the book that I rang to meet. So as far as he knows, I've been using all the time. I meet him in a laundry. Where's the clock? I meet him in the laundry, and the first thing he says to me, he says, fuck me, Tony, you're looking well. I said, yeah, I've just come out of detox. The gear was going in that hand, and he pulled, and the money was going, and he pulled the gear back. Because me being clean, and with where he was at, was hope. You know, I'll never forget that. You know, he wasn't thinking about the money, it was like, it was hope. Here's a man who's clean. And he said, you've just done a cure. And that's what they used to call it then, if you did a detox, they called it, you've done a cure. And I said, well, anyway, you know what I said. I got the gear out of him. I talked it out. But again, I left there thinking, that was so nice. You know, people do care. Even when we're using, we fucking care about people's welfare. And NA is the one place where I know that, you know, no matter what the media or society or whatever say about us or demonize us, we're just sick people. And in here, we're sick people trying to get well. Anyway, I was coming to meetings and I'd leave the meetings early, and I hadn't had a job, I hadn't had a social life for 5 years, and people would say to me, where are you going? And I'd say I was going to work. I didn't have a job. In them days, the off licence used to close at 9:30, so I'd get to the meeting and I'd get down the office and be able to drink myself to sleep. And I don't know what times they close now, but I used to wake up in a worse state. And I tried to drink through recovery. I tried to smoke weed through recovery. I tried to take Valiums and, you know, and antidepressants through recovery. And eventually, you know, it's fucking limbo. The only statement that I was making is that I was here. Nobody said, look, you're bad for our image. You've got to leave. You know, or even with the drinking, a couple of people suggested AA. But it wasn't because they were trying to get rid of me. But in a way, they kind of helped me because, you know, it brought up the Irish in me. Excuse me, Frank, but I'll fucking show them. Well, I don't think I'll, you know, they think because I'm drinking I won't get clean. I'll fucking show them. I got clean on a resentment. I did. I'm exaggerating, but, you know, I took it so personal. I thought, they're writing me off. They don't think I can crack this. So in a way, that sometimes that sort of thing was kind of good. And no one was writing me off. They just couldn't help me. They couldn't talk to me. I wasn't listening. Whatever you were saying to me, I was doing it in my head how it was going to work out. The best thing I ever did to myself was the day that I really surrendered, that I just put my hands up. It came in stages for me, but you've got to understand, I was still going to meetings. I was using, but still going to meetings. And then I met a mate who was coming out of detox. Because again, you know what I was saying to you about when I came in here and I didn't really know a lot of people, and the people that I did know, I didn't see them. Well, that's what I was like when I came in. I was scared. And I had this, my using and my history and my NA, my buddies, and I had this, which was you lot. So I was scared of you lot. So anyone that I knew who I'd used with, I'd be, you know, a friend was coming out of detox. I said, look, let's meet up. And I met him in a pub, which was a really bad thing to do now. And I was 7 days clean, and I thought I'd cracked it. And he ordered a pint of lager, and I thought, fuck me, that looks really nice. I deserve that. I've had 7 days clean. That'll be lovely. And I swallowed it. And then his wife came, and I knew what was happening next. And then the next thing, I'm back in their flat with a needle in my arm. And I've thrown 7 days away. And also, I now know what's coming. This is coming back. This little bit of NA is disappearing. And I fucking cried that day. Because I knew what was coming. I fucking cried, and I went to a meeting that night, and people gathered around me, and the drugs that were in me weren't even working because I was in so much pain. Admittedly, they worked when I got home and the meeting was over. I was like a zombie. But I got up the next day, and again I went to a meeting, and I carried on from there. And I had to do that. I'm lucky to be here. I had to do it that way to really get this thing. I really had to beat myself into a corner because I was scared of this. I was scared of change. I was scared of what was new. I'd go into a using house with people passing the gear around and the works, and I'd be showing them my NA key rings, and they'd be going, yeah, nice one, Tone. That is so fucking lonely, man, because then people weren't going to help me. I couldn't help me, they couldn't help themselves, they weren't going to help me. You're the only people who could help me. And that's a big deal, being a newcomer. You know what I mean? You might come in here and think we're all a gang and we're all friends of friends. It isn't like that. Everyone comes in here alone. And then they become friends, and then they become a community. And this is my community, to be honest with you. And I didn't come in with a gang, really, and I didn't come in with a posse and knowing loads of people. But every time I came back, people were pleased to see me, or they'd remember my name. And my first sponsor was a blessing. You know, he was right hardcore NA, you know. Fucking lunatic, but right hardcore NA. They'd tell me to go, you know, talk about conventions. I thought they were rock festivals. I thought, oh yeah, I'll have some of that. Going to a convention with a packet of condoms in my pocket, you know. It's really responsible, though. Well, it wasn't rock and roll at all, was it? It was like, fucking, this room, she's talking about feelings. That room, that stage, they're talking about feelings. There's a marathon meeting, there's like a casualty wing, they're talking about feelings. Where's the fucking rock and roll? Dressed up for this, haven't I? So... Oh man, I'm insane, and I'm so happy to be part of this. I'm so happy to have my life back. I've had a second crack at it, and I can look at the differences, or I can look at what I haven't done or what I haven't achieved. But I'm so lucky, you know. It's just to be living and breathing and clean. It's an amazing thing. It might be a bit early, but I'm running out of things to say, really. So thanks for hearing me, guys. Thank you. Thank you.